The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 18th of November, 2020. On the podcast today, Neil Ricketts, CEO of Asarion, discusses the results of a preliminary study of modified graphene materials provided for use against SARS-CoV-2. Also on the podcast, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about copper, gold, lithium and the following companies: Alta Strategies and Rambler Mines and Metals. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll also see lots for the content. There's articles there on W Resources, Optibiotics, Europa Metals, Vesarin as well. There's videos there as well. Paul Hill with Adam Hill from Oncommune. That's Dr. Adam Hill. And of course, our COVID-19 index. Let's have a look what's rising there today. Biggest rise of the day is Hemogenics Pharmaceuticals, up 12 or 13% to 9.6 pence. And the biggest faller, DevClever, down 4.8% to 6.95 pence. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Ricketts, CEO of Asarion, as VRS ticker. Neil, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. Always a pleasure to be here, as you know. Love to be able to get this this news out and explain it slightly better.
Yeah, well, we're talking here about, obviously, you know, your company is involved in all different kinds of materials, but advanced materials, and we're talking about hybrid graphene, and it's inhibited, SARS-CoV-2, of course, and tests being done in the laboratory, and we'll go into that in a bit, because it's very important, of course, and, it's, you know, these problems are going to be around with us for a long time. It's not just SARS, coronavirus and COVID, of course. It'll be a problem for a long time. Before we get into that, Neil, for people not familiar with Asarion, can you just explain what it's about, please?
Yeah, sure. So we're an advanced materials company listed on AIM. And what we do is we work with the great universities in the UK, and we take the technology that they're developing and then we put it into applications that can really help society.
Yeah, yeah, excellent stuff. Okay, now they say SARS because it's you know, COVID is SARS 2, isn't it? It's a severe acute respiratory syndrome, and you've shown that inhibition by hybrid graphene nanoplatelet and metal oxide powders. Now that's quite a complex title there, but what does it mean? What's happened? Tell us about this, if you could, Neil.
So basically, what we've done is we've so one of the technologies that we're involved in is the exploitation of graphene, working with the University of Manchester and the University of Cambridge. And what we've been able to do here is we've taken our graphene nanoplatelets, these subatomic particles, well, these atomic particles, should I say, and we've added groups of chemicals to them, which mean that they're kind of modified. And in this particular case, what we've been able to do is we've been able to modify those chemicals that we're producing to a level that inhibits, you know, COVID-19.
I see. And you are doing masks, aren't you? Is that the same kind of thing? What's happening here? Is this hybrid in those masks?
No, not at the moment. So this is preliminary testing. This is the next kind of move on from that. And what we're looking at here are materials that can retain that ability to fight the disease. So not only, you know, attacking the virus at the point of treatment, but then also being able to make sure that we can continue to inhibit this disease. When COVID came around, we were already actively involved in a number of projects. We'd already spoken to the mask manufacturers about PPE and about how graphene could play a part. It's been a real theme for a couple of years within the graphene community. You know, what uses can we get from this new wonder material? It's so flexible. It's so able to be adapted to different circumstances. And what COVID-19 has done is it's really accelerated that work. And so what you know, what we've got now is we've got a supply chain for the manufacture of masks with our partner out in China. Professor out there is doing some outstanding work on how we use these materials actually in products. So the next phase for this particular material is to get it out of the laboratory. We've tested it in a level three lab, the only place where you can do this kind of live testing. And we've got to get it into applications now and just prove that those applications work, and then we can get it to market. So all the work that we've been doing over the last few months, you know, when COVID came around, we had the opportunity either to kind of sit back and wait it out, or to push even harder. And I'm absolutely delighted that the team has pushed really, really to the extreme and worked really, really hard. We've worked together as a collective group to look at these big challenges. It doesn't matter whether it's making beds for the nightingales or it's making masks and PPE. And they've been able to demonstrate that we can take this technology from concept to test, you know, successful testing in a very short period of time.
Yeah. And for example, like I say, if this proves out at further levels, what kind of, you know, as an example, just off the top of your head, what kind of applications can be used for, in what, you know, substances, and where can it be used?
So what we've developed here is a couple of different derivatives of material which can be then included into other materials to give it this antiviral inhibition. Mm-hmm. So if you imagine that we take this nanomat material and then we mix it into some of the products that may be being produced by AA, like those bed panels, you know, we're hoping that we can be able to demonstrate that we can not only create the functional aspect of that bed panel, but then it absolutely increase its ability to be able to fight this disease and make sure that it can continue to do that. So, you know, it's been a very exciting morning already. We've had a number of companies contact us, and, you know, those range of applications, they kind of move from masks and PPE, as we've spoken about, right the way through to things like filters and other things that are going to be useful in the fight against these types of diseases. You're quite right. COVID-19 is just one instance of a range of different diseases that have kind of attacked us over the last decade. N1H1, SARS, you know, all of these things, you know, have had significant impact on communities, and COVID-19 is by far the biggest one that's hit us so far, but I don't think it'll be the last, unfortunately. And so it's kind of our duty to come up with these materials which can kind of give us a fighting chance.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I can see in the future it almost being compulsory to have, you know, NHS workers wearing antimicrobial PPE, you know, because that makes sense, doesn't it, really?
Well, if you think about, you know, we're highly dependent on all of our services. You know, the NHS have done a fantastic job, in my view. You know, they've gone, you know, way outside of what we would expect in trying to deal with this disease. But it's also the police, it's the fire service, all the support functions. It's even the delivery drivers that, you know, have kind of maintained the supply chains of food and things like that. And what's become very clear to me is that we've kind of been a little bit arrogant. We've been a little bit kind of blasé about how we protect ourselves. You know, I used to take flights, you know, like they were taxis, in terms of, you know, getting around the world to go to various meetings and so on. And now I'm a lot more conscious about actually, you know, what risk am I putting myself at and what risk am I putting other people at by traveling when particularly, you know, we might not be that well, or we might be under the weather or whatever. So I think people will become a lot more conscious. I think they're also a little bit more fearful of things like traveling. And if these materials can be used to alleviate some of those concerns, and I think, you know, as we get back to a more normal life, it'll be very, very important. And that's why these materials are so important in kind of getting us back to that kind of situation that we were in before.
Yeah, absolutely. And other parts of the business, keeping busy?
Yeah. So the team has been working hard on a variety of different projects and processes, including, you know, G-Scale. But they've really gone out of their way to make sure that we're making as much progress as possible at the moment. And, it's great to have such a great team that we're expanding. and taking on these challenges. So for me, I did a webinar last night. One of the questions, you know, what gets you most excited? And for me, it's actually being able to see these technologies that maybe a few months ago we were talking about actually giving very positive test results, far in excess of our expectations in the laboratory, and then getting those actually into products that kind of make everybody's lives better.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, now, as always, three reasons. If someone just listening to this likes the sound of what you're doing but are not yet following the story, just three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, so the first reason is our connections and contacts. We're supported by a variety of different organisations, including Innovate UK, but we work very closely with the University of Manchester, the University of Cambridge, the University of Warwick through WMG. And so we've built this great foundation that we can now build off. The second thing is that we're in one of the most exciting areas in terms of development. You know, advanced materials is well understood to be an enabling technology for a number of different industries, including the automotive and the aerospace industry. And the third thing is that we're now able to demonstrate with scientific fact that graphene is not only an interesting science experiment, but it is also going to be absolutely important in society moving forward.
Marvellous stuff. Neil, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yes, I'm good, thank you.
What's the general feel, you know, from a resource point of view, a macro level? What's your feel? What's your thoughts there?
Well, this has been an unexpectedly good week in the metals markets, well, particularly for the base metals and industrial minerals. They're all picking up. I don't think anybody particularly expected that. Copper prices had a bit of a run on Monday. I say a bit of a run. I think there must have, anybody with a short position must have taken some real pain. Prices jumped higher. I think the markets are enthusiastic on the back of Joe Biden replacing Donald Trump. Gold price pulled back $100 on that news, but actually didn't crash through some technical support levels, which is quite good. So you know, people still want to hold gold. They still see a lot of risk in the global environment, and they still see downside for the US dollar. In fact, if anything, Biden is probably good for US dollar weakness in the longer term. So we saw Citigroup come out and say they thought the dollar was going to depreciate by maybe 20% this year, which is a pretty big call, even by a group like Citigroup.
And for people not understanding that, the significance of a weaker dollar is what? What's the knock-on effect for that?
Well, for metals prices, which are denominated in US dollars and priced in US dollars, you know, around the world, that means that the price goes up because as the US dollar weakens, the people who buy it in different currencies are happy to pay more in dollar terms. So we effectively see all the metals prices go up. Even gold would have taken some benefit from that, the US dollar weakness that we've seen recently. It's been a bit up and down, but the general view by a lot of, shall we say, experts and funds is that the dollar will weaken now, maybe for a year, probably 2 years, that it's had all the strength that it's benefited from because of the chaos from the pandemic. And now, as the Americans restore their economic growth through spending of stimulus funds, and of course maintain low interest rates probably for longer, that means there's less reason to hold the dollar and much more reason to move investment money from the US into other jurisdictions.
Yes, it's a bullish move, then, you're saying, for if it weakens that much.
Well, it's great. You know, if you're a UK investor and you want to hold something that is going to benefit from this, you buy a mining company or maybe an oil and gas company, because you're buying into what should be higher. Although the dollar will weaken, well, actually, that's good from a cost perspective usually. But your metals prices are going to go up, and you'll benefit in sterling terms. So,
And is this why, for example, like copper? Well, I'm looking back and look at the chart here. 15th of June 2018, that's where we are at the moment. That's the last time it hit this level, and that was a double top pretty much, so it didn't look as going higher. But now it looks like a strong uptrend in copper. Is that why you think copper, is there, other than that, is there a fundamental reason, apart from the, we know the long macro picture for copper is rising? And of course, this week, Boris Johnson, one of the, you know, only one of the governments around the world, has brought forward that date when you can no longer buy petrol and diesel cars, which of course is good for copper. More copper is used in electric vehicles. So is that as well, or is it just the dollar, you think, weakening that's pushing copper price up?
You know, you're right. You've hit the nail on the head. There are very good fundamental reasons why copper prices will continue to go up and why they have gone up. And it's because China is installing an awful lot of electric vehicle chargers right now, as are many other nations in the world. I mean, we are as usual playing catch up, and utilities and other companies are going to have to spend an awful lot of money buying copper cabling to connect these electric vehicle chargers. And now we're seeing fast chargers being rolled out in California by Tesla, and people saying that they haven't even got enough time to do the things they used to do when they were charging their Tesla cars. Mm. They haven't got time to walk the dog or go and get a coffee and a bucket of KFC or whatever it is that they do.
Walk the dog and get a bucket of KFC, yeah. If I was people, I'd leave that KFC out. Just walk the dog, it's healthier. But I was saying today, but there's a worry about this country's infrastructure. So we're not ready for, you know, charging guys. I mean, you take a sort of busy street in London, for example, a residential street, where, you know, there's hardly any room to park on the road, you know, literally. So how are you going to charge your cars overnight? You can't have loads of vehicles charging overnight. And, of course, to charge them up on the move, like you said, even speed chargers take, well, half an hour, 40 minutes, maybe an hour to get charged. So at the moment, people are worried about that, aren't they? There's a charging worry. I have great faith in human ingenuity and innovation. Like we've seen with COVID, the vaccines, how fast we've got them out. You know, I think when money's poured into it, it'll work. You know, it'll happen. We'll be able to charge cars very quickly. There'll be points everywhere. I think it'll work. You know, if it has to work, it'll work. Don't you think?
It'll work, but there are going to be some problems along the way. I mean,
yeah, of course,
people are going to be fighting over access to chargers. They're going to get upset if somebody leaves their charger, their car on a charger for too long. Then, of course, you're going to get some vandalism of probably people cutting cables in the street and stuff like that. So there are going to be some significant issues to overcome. So far, I haven't seen any of that in London. But then there's not enough cable capacity for the power to charge a car for everybody. So in an ideal world, everyone with a house or a flat in London would be able to park on a charger. But of course, but there simply isn't the capacity within the grid network to supply electricity to all those vehicles. So there's going to have to be some sort of power rationing for the electric vehicles in order to, and let's face it, most people in London a lot of people will leave their car in the street not doing anything for most of the time. But of course, the people who do use their vehicles more often are going to have a real issue with this, and not so many people have a driveway to put a car into these days. Mm. Those things are going to certainly be selling for a premium going forwards, and there are going to be these issues to resolve.
Do you know, I was just thinking about it, really, when you think of it, you know, the big companies, this is ideal for them to pivot. I mean, I'm talking about the oil majors like BP and Shell, who have these forecourts, you know, with petrol now on them. I mean, I think, if anything, they need to pivot into clean energy, which they are, and I think they'll plough money into fast chargers, because if the infrastructure's there for people to pull in and, you know, fill their car up now, that's in the mindset, isn't it? And I think it'll come down to, if they can get it down to, the thing is, at the moment, like, so I don't know what it's like, but someone said about 40 minutes fast charge is doable, but that's nowhere near good enough, is it? You fill your car up within, what, 2-3 minutes? And that's what's needed, isn't it? Already 2-3 minutes of, you know, of boost charge, and off you go. The technology is going to have to catch up, you know?
Well, you don't necessarily need to fill your battery completely full. Mm. It's just a question of getting enough energy in there for you know, your journey plus a comfortable spare charge in there, so that you don't suffer too much range anxiety. Mm. But of course, everybody's going to want to keep their batteries topped up to as much as they can. But yeah, we are going to have to figure out a way of ensuring that everybody gets access to these chargers. And at the end of the day, the only solution is buying more copper and fitting more chargers to give everybody access. And the government today came out and said they were looking at a road charge levy, so you'll pay per mile on the road, because they realize they're not going to be able to charge electricity or charge tax on the electricity in the way they do on fuel. So fuel duty brings in something like £40 billion a year. It's an extraordinary number. And the government's going to lose all that if people are having to drive electric vehicles. And I think they can see that this money is going to be eroded away. So they're going to start charging us per mile. And I'm fine with that, because I think it is fair that the people who use the roads more should pay for it more. And okay, you do kind of do that with buying fuel, but that has to change now.
Yeah. And there'll have to be some kind of incentive as well. Like, for example, you know, if you drive to work, there'll have to be workplace charges, you know, and there's some kind of incentive to use that in some way. Okay, so that's why, lots of reasons why copper is going to be, we've said it for a long time. In fact, I couldn't believe when it was dipping down in, you know, a while back, the trend was down for a long time. From that June 2018, the trend has been down for a while. It's popped up a few times, but you know, everyone knows sort of the copper outlook is very bullish, and yet in March it's with everything else sold off, you know, went down to an all-time low, or historic low, quite a few year low, and now it's starting to rally strongly. Well, at least now it's reflecting the story we know should be happening. And so you said gold is hitting a bit of a dip. There's a story you mentioned before we came on about lithium and Mexico. What's the deal there, John?
Yeah, the Mexican government's decided it wants to nationalize the lithium industry in Mexico. Now, it's interesting because Ganfeng Lithium exercised its option to increase its stake in Bacanora Lithium on Friday. And suddenly we see this news, which I'm not sure exactly when it was tabled, but the Mexican government has tabled a draft bill on this proposal to nationalize the lithium industry. I can only think, because I'm sure Ganfeng must have some idea what's going on in Mexico with the government, I can only think that there'll be a carve-out for Bacanora, because it makes no sense for the government to nationalize the Sonora lithium project and cause problems for Bacanora, because the government would make nothing off that. So I think what's going on in Mexico is that they'll nationalize the salt flats that they have, where there's high-grade lithium brines, so that other people don't come in and shall we say, take advantage of those Mexican assets. And I think they're saying, well, we're going to control and produce the lithium in Mexico, and we're going to use that for our own automotive industry, because Mexico is a huge producer of cars. It produces a lot of cars for General Motors and Ford, which are then exported into the US. So it's a big industry for them, and they don't want to be left out. And I think that's fair enough. But it wouldn't be fair if they nationalised the Sonora project, and I've got the feeling they won't.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Marvel stuff. All right. And so, company news. A bit of news that day from Altus Strategies. I know you mentioned them before. What's happening there?
They're pretty exciting with Altus. They've revised one of the key components of the preliminary economic assessment. So that's the economic view of the project. And metallurgical recoveries, this is the amount of metal you can get out of the, or amount of gold you can get out of the ore, have gone to 95% from 80%. That's a really significant upgrade. And what this does is it increases the net present value of the project to $152 million at a $1,500 an ounce gold price. So that's a pretty modest gold price to use right now. And that's gone up from 115. So a good increase in the value of the project, and very nicely done, I have to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. And And also, do you know what's been followed quite a bit on Vox of late? Is Rambler Mines and Metals, RM. You've done a bit of a fundraiser there. And first of all, what are they about? I don't know much about them. What's happening with them?
Well, Rambler is another one of our clients. We're Nomad and Broker to it. And we've just managed an $8 million equity financing for them. It's part of a $13 million fundraising. So it's a complete financial restructuring of the business. Other debt holders, other investors have had to take significant haircuts. New investors have come in, new institutional investors. And the business, which had got into trouble because of very low copper prices earlier this year, is now benefiting from much higher copper prices. But one of the key things here is a guy called Toby Bradbury, who was responsible for the turnaround at Shanta Gold, and is very, very well respected within the industry. And he's a man who knows how to take an underground mine and turn it into something more profitable. So he's gone in there. He's got a plan to raise production, to improve the way it operates, optimize all the processes, and the investors are backing him to make that work. So we see a lot of value coming through in Rambler going forwards, and we're very happy to put the effort in to make this work.
Marvelous stuff. Cool. Anything else happening, John?
Well, we're seeing diamond prices improve at the moment, which is nice. Petra Diamonds, which has been in trouble because it's got quite a lot of debt, came out and said that. And I see this anyway generally through the diamond price indices, which we receive through a group called Rapoport. So that's pretty exciting. And other industrial metals looking good too. So the whole environment looks like we've got a rerun of what happened after the stimulus programs in 2008, when we came out of the global financial crisis. And it looks like the sector's going to have a great time for certainly the next year or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel at the moment, I think the market is going to have a bit of a sell-off before we have a rally towards the end of the year and into the new year. Because if you look at the figures, you can't ignore the figures. Infection rates in America, and of course America, like I says, when they sneeze, we catch a cold. And they're starting to see restrictions now ramp up in certain states, in America. And it's getting worse and worse. And I think, the markets will... Once the presidential elections... I mean, the attention has been on that, hasn't it? Completely, almost. With a bit of COVID being a sideshow. But I think COVID will take centre stage. Of course, we have the vaccines coming along, which will be very good. But it won't be fast enough to dampen down this wave too. So I think we may see a bit of... I see it as opportunity, if you've got spare cash. But we may see a bit of opportunity to pick some cheap stocks, the next few weeks or so. But then I think we'll have a good rally towards the end of the year. It's completely speculation, but if you look at the figures around most second waves now, they're starting to ramp up in America. They're not really restricting it. Europe, we've all shut down pretty much, or some major cities and countries have, but America haven't. And I think, well, when will they do it? Because they'll have to do it if their hospitals are filling up, won't they?
Well, we haven't seen news on hospitals being overflowing and huge problems in America, despite their very high infection rates.
I think two states have put on restrictions because the hospitals are filling up. And I can't remember what they were, but I'll try and Google it. But carry on, John.
So it sounds like they must have better hospital capacity than we have over here, where our problem at the moment seems to be a shortage of nurses, which always seems to have been an issue in the UK. But some of that's because they make the exams really rather difficult for the people who want to go into nursing. So we're always shooting ourselves in the foot on this side of things. But yeah, there was a lot of risk off trade going into the election, because hedge funds didn't necessarily know which way to call it. So we had a bit of a Joe Biden coming in boost to the markets. Then, of course, we had the Pfizer vaccine news, and following that, there are other very positive vaccine reports coming through of 90% and 95% efficacy rates, which is brilliant. Of course, reality sets in, and it will take a while for the vaccines to be rolled out, but at least we know we can start to protect the more vulnerable people in society within the next few months, and life will return to normal. So that's brilliant news. Yes, Biden has said he's going to try and keep everything open as long as he can, which is also important from an economic perspective. And remember, the data in China and the US is generally really very good, particularly in China, which continues to grow its economy and improve everything that it does. So from a metals perspective, we can see more demand coming through. And okay, there's going to be the odd wobble here and there, but and probably there'll be a little bit more risk off trade going into Christmas, because that's what the hedge funds do in late November and December. So there will be opportunities for people to buy in again.
Yeah, yeah. Just look at America. Mardi Gras in New Orleans has been cancelled. There's other places like Iowa. Governor ordered all indoor gatherings to be limited to 15. South Dakota, mask wearing mandates, vote on that. Maryland and Ohio imposed 10 p.m. curfews in bars and restaurants on Tuesday. So they are starting to sort of ratchet down and restrict. And like I said, if it gets worse, of course, we all follow the American markets. But I think, if they have a dip, I mean, the rest may dip. But I always see this as a long-term opportunity anyway, you know. I mean, I'm thinking as an investor, this time next year, where will the markets be? And I genuinely think, you know, a lot of these companies that have been battered down will be a lot higher, you know, if they're still around, of course. You know?
Well, yes, I mean, there are going to be some shocks to the system. There's a Chinese company called Tanqi Lithium, which has... which is unable to pay some of its debt, which is coming due, and there's going to be other shocks to the system like that. So we're not out of the woods yet. You're right. How big those shocks are going to be, we don't quite know. But the fact is, the world hasn't fallen apart, and the businesses we're looking at look like they've still got sensible growth profiles, and that's the important thing to focus on.
Yeah, yeah. Marvellous stuff, John. Thanks for that, and we'll speak to you next week.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. Let's try to do the top 10. Yeah, let's do the top 10. KL1 at 10. Salt Lake Potash at 9. At 8, Good Energy Group. At 7, Vesarion. 6, Source Bio International. At 5, Verici DX. At 4, AstraZeneca. At 3, Argo Blockchain. At 2, Alien Metals, down 4%. And at 1, Remote Monitored Systems. It's down 5.5% pretty much to 2.95. So the big rise. I think people are chasing it. Be careful. Okay, top 5 most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, BWA Group. Notice of AGM. At 4, Micro Focus. Big rise today, trading statement. At 3, Vesarion, SARS, I've talked with Neil on the podcast, of course. At 2, Europa Metals, result of independent preliminary economic study. And at 1, Optibiotics, license and supply agreement with Genuine Health. Let's just check out what most viewed RNSs are, because sometimes they can be different than most liked. Some people will view something and not like it. In fact, it's Vesarion most viewed. Hemogenics as well, second, and for farmers there. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Anyway, that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.